Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
You just killed a helicopter with a car.
I was out of bullets.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first podcast of 2013. We are the BCD Flicksters, and we are back after a long holiday break. As always, joined by my co-host, Mr. Daniel Stoll, and Mr. Bama Rogers. And we are here. We're going to open up. We're going to break the mold a little bit by counting down our top 10 movies of 2012.
There are no rules.
Oh, that's right. Everything you thought you knew about this podcast just got upended. None. It's a lie for today.
Only for this one.
Now, we will start off saying that we were supposed to have a Christmas podcast that came out before the holidays hit. We were going to review Nightmare Before Christmas and talk about our favorite Christmas movies. We're going to go ahead and throw our quick thoughts out there, because we did watch it and we kind of want to talk a little bit. So before we hop into our top 10 movies 2012, Daniel Stoll, what did you think about Nightmare Before Christmas, quickly?
I think it was definitely overhyped. I heard a lot of positive things about this movie, so I'm probably going to give it like a C-minus. C was what I was thinking about giving it. So music was fantastic, but other than that, I was just kind of like, eh.
All right, Bama, what did you think about this movie?
I love this movie, but it's mainly because of nostalgia, because I saw this movie as a kid. Of course, mostly for the music portion of it, because I'm a musical person. I would probably give it a B+, and the real negatives on this would be, this is a short movie, but it feels really long, surprisingly.
Yep, totally my point. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I've watched this movie a few times in my days, and I still don't understand what all the hype's about. I'm going to throw a D down on this one. Now, it's a very great animation, and the music is really awesome. However, this is just a crappy movie, okay? I've never sat in a 75-minute-long movie that felt like a 3-hour movie in my life, and I feel this every way, every single time.
My inner child wants to punch you in the face.
Well, your
right
inner
now.
Child's going to get punched back down into your inner self, okay? All right. So as you can tell, we would have had a heated discussion, so we wanted to get our words out there. But anyway, moving on to our top 10 of 2012. Here's how we're going to do things, folks. I'm going to start on my list. Then we're going to go to Daniel's. And then we're going to go to Bama's. And then if we have one that overlaps, we're going to read off and be like, okay, that was my number so-and-so and so-and-so. And then we're going to talk. And then we're going to move on back to me, to the next movie. Hope you follow, because your mind's about to be blown.
Boom.
All right. First off, I'm going to start by saying that 2012 was a pretty freaking awesome year. Okay, I saw over 40 movies that were released this last year. And let me just say, getting down to top 10 for me at least was a lot of fun, but it was no easy piece of cake, man. It was no walk in the park. So there's a lot of great stuff that came out this last year. I totally recommend, if you didn't get to see a lot, to go back and check out this year. There was a lot of good things to see in pretty much any genre you can think of. We had great action, a great comic book movie, pretty much the best comic book movies we've had since 2008. We had great character dramas. We had great horror movies. I mean, it was just a great year for movies in 2012. But I will start with my number 10, which is Skyfall. That's right.
Oh my god.
You're not gonna get to hear that too many more times, folks. So good. There it is. All right, guys. Skyfall, number 10. I think this is probably debatably the best Bond movie ever made. I think it's on par with Casino Royale, which I also freaking love Casino Royale. But for me, Daniel Craig's Bond is the Bond, and this movie was the sequel that I felt like was promised from Casino Royale that we didn't get with Quantum of Solace. It had an epic, intense story that was always moving, always going places I didn't expect. You had a villain that was on par with James Bond's character and probably one of the greatest Bond villains, the most memorable anyway. And then you had real stakes. People died in this movie, some of these big characters. And what's really cool is they brought back a lot of these old Bond tropes and kind of threw them in there for fun to kind of remind you that, hey, this franchise is evolving. It's about to go some new places, but they still remember the past. So, some of the best cinematography I've seen this year, hands down, out of all the movies on my list. I seriously think this is some of the most beautiful cinematography I've seen all year. But that is some of my base thoughts. Gentlemen, did that make either one of your lists?
It did make my list. Now, I should say this. I only saw 11 movies last year that came out last year. So I saw a lot of movies that were new to me, but I only saw 11 that actually came out last year. So I'm a little bit more limited in what I can choose. Skyfall did make my list, and it was actually number 3 on my list. So I one of the more intense movies that I got to see this year that I really enjoyed. And I'd like to see what your list has, the fact that yours is 10, and it's 10 on your list and 3 on mine.
And it barely made the cut. My number 10 was a bad spot. There was about 4 movies I was like pulling to the creek. I'm like, I don't know which one I want. I didn't want to cut any of them. It was tough.
I definitely agree with your analysis. The villain in that movie was spectacular. Yeah,
played by Javier Bardem. Phenomenal actor. Yeah, he's a one supporting actor for.
He did amazing with his role, and it definitely made it feel very eerie on the screen. So, very, very, very good movie.
Well, unfortunately, I still have not seen this movie. I'm not really a big Bond fan. I mean, I have seen Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale, so I do plan on seeing this. And from what I've heard, I mean, like you said, it's your best Bond film you think ever made. So I do like Daniel Craig as Bond. But, you know, I'll have more thoughts after I've seen it.
Awesome, awesome. Only last couple things I want to say out this. This is not just a great Bond movie. This is a great movie. There are some people out there who totally disagree. I've had some conversations with those people who don't really care for it a whole lot, and that's cool. I respect your opinion. I just flat out disagree because I think this was just captivating movie that gave so much more than almost any other Bond movie has ever done before, with maybe the exception of Casino Royale and maybe Goldeneye. But that's just my 2 cents on the Bond series. All right, Stoll, moving on to your number 10. What did you have?
Well, like I said, I've only seen 11 movies this year, so I can't. Well, I don't have a lot to choose from. Only one didn't make the list. I'm not going to tell you what it was because it was really bad. So I actually have some bad movies on my list. I would say my top 8 is all right. My top 5 is definitely solid. But so Wrath of the Titans actually makes my list at number 10.
Oh, God.
It was significantly better than Clash of the Titans.
Well, I will give it that.
Okay. Significantly better than a pile of poop that's been through the belly of a hippo for 16 days and recycled, okay?
If I was going to give it a grade...
How much better is that?
If I was going to give it a grade, I would have given it like maybe a C+. So,
yeah,
there you go.
I definitely agree. That was one movie that I saw this year, but didn't make my list.
Good.
But, yes, definitely better than that god-awful first movie. I don't even want to mention the name of it because it was so bad. But, I mean, it was better, but it wasn't great. I would say it was very average at best.
Well, I did not have the opportunity to see this movie that is Wrath of the Titans.
Whoa. I've seen 11 movies, you've seen 40, and I've seen one that you haven't.
That's true.
It's pretty incredible.
I prioritize, and that one's like the I'm like when the gun's on the table and I'm contemplating my life ending, that'll be the one I'll watch.
Okay.
So there you go. So that is how high up on the priority is for me. I'm not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. So, all right, Bama, you're number 10.
All right, I've seen 17. I don't know if I mentioned that yet or not, but I've seen 17. So I had a couple that were pretty tough to keep off this top 10. But the number 10 for me was John Carter. Now, with this one, I had no clue what this movie was about going into it. And I was like, it seems kind of cheesy. It seems like, you know, a superhero type movie. But then it just went completely different from there for me. I really enjoyed a lot of the action scenes in this one. Just overall, I would say fairly good film. I wouldn't give the story of it a really high grade, but action and acting in it, fairly solid, I'd say.
You know, I actually really liked that movie a lot. I mean, it wasn't my it was not my top movies of the year, but that's an underrated movie, I think. It had problems for sure, and I thought the third act was definitely the death of that movie. But there was a lot of really cool stuff in that movie. Visually, it was an incredibly impressive movie. And there was actually some times I thought there was some really great character moments in there where I was like, man, that's tough. Where he's like mowing down all those aliens and like it cross cuts to him like having to bury his whole family and stuff. I was like, man, there was some good stuff in there. And you had the dog. I can't remember his name for the life of me.
But
he was awesome.
Either.
The one that was like super speedy and crap.
Yeah,
that guy was awesome. But that was actually
an alien dog.
An actual dog. Clarified. But so I mean, definitely not one of my top movies. But that was a good movie, Bama. I think that was a little underrated and gets overlooked a lot because it bombed and a lot of people didn't see it. But not as terrible as you might expect. But also
not very well accepted.
It wasn't worldwide. Yeah. Right. But I also don't think it was amazing. But you know, definitely worth a watch for sure. All right. Any comments, Mr. Stoll?
I did not get to see it, and so there's not really much I can say about it. I didn't even really pay attention to what was said after it either, so,
yeah. All righty. Well, moving on to my number 9, The Cabin in the Woods. This movie is truly a gem in the truest sense. This is a movie that flies under the radar. The hardcore of a hardcore horror fans go and see. They love it, and they go spread it to all their friends, and eventually, 10 years down the road, we get a direct-to-DVD sequel. Okay, this is a great movie. Actually, written by Joss Whedon of Avengers fame these days, Firefly, you know, the Lord Master of the nerds, and is directed by his Buffy the Vampire Slayer co-writer, Drew Goddard. So, anyway, this movie, I don't know if I really want to spoil anything.
You don't.
This is such
you
an amazing movie. Anything,
because I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my gosh.
And
I can't.
Y'all have told me that I need to see
this. You need
this,
to see this. So. And the better, less you know, the better. But let me just say this movie. I'll give you a sense of what the movie does.
should I
just
earmuff?
Give them what the trailer gave.
Should I put on earmuffs right now?
The trailer almost spoils too much.
No, the trailer spoils the premise. But that's it. Like, it's just the premise. You don't even, like, I thought I was being spoiled when I saw the trailer. I was like, watching. I'm like, man, that gives away a lot, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. It doesn't give away anything. There's a lot here. But okay, let me say this much. What this movie does is it deconstructs the horror movie genre in such a way that is so brilliant and so smart, but it's not self-indulgent either. It's like, while it is, you know, deconstructing the horror movie genre, it also is a horror movie. So I feel like it's doing has a lot of that meta type movie like Scream, except for I think it does it significantly better than Scream, and it does it in a far more creative way than anything I've seen. And this might be the most creative movie I've seen this year because it's so interesting because this movie is poking so much fun and like really stabbing the horror genre and gutting it and saying, oh, look at all this crap. But at the same time,
stabbing the horror genre. Yes, it is.
Got it. All right, stabbing the horror genre. But it also is like a love letter to the horror genre and to horror fans. So without spoiling anything, that's about all I can say. But what it does it so brilliantly and it's so smart. And the first time, it's surprise after surprise. And then you get to the third act and you're like, after you didn't think they could pull out any more stops, it just goes off the rails and does some truly holy smokes. This is amazing, hilarious stuff.
Would you say it goes off the rails on a crazy train?
Oh!
Ozzy Osbourne reference.
Yes, there we go. But that is my thoughts on Cabin in the Woods. I without spoiling anything, please go check this movie out. If you're the remotest fan of horror movies, this is just such a smart movie. And it's such a great way to take a movie and like pick it apart while also not like insulting it either. So, loads of Easter eggs. Loads of Easter eggs. Like, I'm talking, like, you have to pause the camera. If you want to see all the Easter eggs, you have to, like, pause and, like, frame by frame some of this stuff. So, Stoll, you saw this movie, right?
Yes, I did, and it did make my top 10. It actually made my top 5. It was number 5. Interesting that I have it ranked lower than Skyfall, but you have it ranked higher than Skyfall. But I absolutely love this movie, and honestly, it was one of my favorite movies of the year. It was just so fantastic. I didn't get to see it until it came out on DVD, but I got to see it on Blu-ray DVD, and it was just so funny. As soon as it ended, I immediately wanted to watch it again. Like it was amazing. So definitely worth picking up and watching.
This is definitely one you'll want to watch more than once. Absolutely, without a chance. The first time you're experiencing it, the second time you're like, okay, I want to look at what this movie was really doing here, you know? All right, Bama, so you have not seen this movie, so we shall move on. Mr. Stoll, what is your number 9?
Again, especially these last two, like my 10 and 9, don't go see these movies. My number 9 was Mirror Mirror, which was Julia Roberts, Snow White.
Hey, redeeming quality before I start trashing you on this. Sean Bean is in the movie.
Yes, he is.
For a very brief time.
And it's awesome because of Sean Bean.
And it is Sean Bean.
Like I said, it was okay. That was about all I can say about it. It probably would have gotten C-minus if I had to grade it. It's kind of sad that my top 10 includes C's.
Set the bar high, Stoll.
It was all right. I went and saw it because of my girlfriend, so there you go.
Oh, blame
Rachel!
Okay. All right. Well,
we haven't done that.
We can't be too hard on you, Stoll. It's okay if you have Mirror Mirror on your list. You can raise the bar a little bit for next year.
You know what it says about his list? It only gets better.
This is true. It does keep getting better.
Okay, I'll say this. My top eight are worth seeing. The bottom two, don't see them.
Bama, what is your number nine, sir?
My number nine, I think this is one that everyone would enjoy, no matter who you are, man, woman, adult, child, teenager. Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph.
Nice animation movie. Really good story, you know, kind of looking at, you know, what it would be like for a video game character to go into something, into a different game of a different genre. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say too much about it, but video game character from a kind of a rampage type game where he's destroying everything. He wants to become the hero. So it's interesting spin on, you know, what could happen with that type of character. Mm-hmm. I would grade this pretty high, maybe A-, maybe an A, but nothing that really blew my mind about this. Great animation, very memorable characters, just overall a great film.
Yeah, you know, this did not make my top 10, but I loved it. This is one of those that was really fighting for that number 10 spot really hard. I love this movie. It was a lot of great fun, some great performance. I love that they threw him into, like, the Halo-type genre, then you have your Candyland mm-hmm. type thing, and then all the so many Easter eggs. But what's really great is it doesn't just play off the gimmick of the video game, arcade, retro thing. Like, honestly, because at its core, there's a really nice story here about a guy who's basically trying to redeem himself, and he wants to fit in, he wants to change. And I think that's why it's got such a universal appeal. And that mm-hmm. video game stuff definitely is fun for us, guys, and nerds and stuff like that. But I think it's a movie you're totally right. Anyone could see. It's a great family movie. I love it, too. Didn't make my number 10. It was honorable mention quality right there. It was an excellent movie, though. I really enjoyed it. Probably the best anime movie I saw this year. All right. Stahl, any comments?
Didn't get to see it. Really want to, so hopefully I'll get to see it soon.
You'd probably like it.
I think you'd like it, yeah. Safe bet. If you're a human being and you have a soul, you'll like it. If you don't,
you have no soul.
You have no soul. You're a ginger. Get out.
Leave.
Okay, now I'm going to get killed by a ginger army or something. Okay.
OJ's coming.
Number eight. Number eight. Oh, and this is a controversial one, folks. There's a lot of haters of this movie out there. Prometheus. This is my number eight. I love this movie. Now, let me state what... Here are the criticisms of this movie. This movie is considered to be vague, too ambiguous. It's too wrapped up in this philological premise, and it doesn't answer questions. And you know what's fun, really ironic about this is that's the reason I love this movie. I love the open-ended nature of it. I love all these ideas that are presented, and I love like the fact that like they basically legendary director Ridley Scott, and then always Damon Lindelof. I forgot the bell to ring Damon Lindelof. But Damon Lindelof, you know, they made this movie that is really polarizing. We talked about it earlier in the podcast, but they make basically what is like a puzzle for the viewer to solve, in a way. I mean, because I feel like the pieces are all there. There's a lot of stuff we just have to put together on our own. But that's why I liked it, is because this is a great movie. You can talk about the ideas presented after the movie, and like it really stimulates conversation, I guess, to ask the questions and to look at them, and then discuss what do you think the movie was saying about this, as opposed to the movie just being like, well, here's what we think. It's, well, here's some ideas, and here's some characters. And now that this movie's not perfect, there are a lot of dumb characters in this movie, and there's a lot of things that are kind of frustrating. But then you got stuff like Michael Fassbender playing Dave, who is absolutely phenomenal. Like, I love the character, I love the portrayal, and it's just such a classic science fiction, a type of science fiction which just hasn't really been around anymore, with the philosophical kind of classical take on science fiction, something that's been missing for a while. And I went and saw this movie, and I had sat down with a couple guys and talked for a couple hours about stuff that was in this movie. So that's what I'm saying. That is why I love this movie. There's a lot to think in here. And it's not just an Alien prequel. In fact, in my mind, it's very far removed from Alien, even though it is technically in the same universe. So I like Prometheus. Let the raging begin, because I'm sure tons of you out there hated it.
I never got to see this movie, but I really want to see this movie. I feel like it would be a movie that I like. I tend to like that kind of ending a lot better. So I really want to see it.
I unfortunately did not catch this one either. I've seen a couple of the Alien movies, and I know this is kind of a prequel to those. So I'm not in a big rush to see this, but I may watch it. I don't know.
All right.
If I feel like it.
If you feel like it. You need to watch it. I've got it on Blu-ray, so you can borrow it sometime. Not a problem.
Yeah.
And it's DVD combo pack, so you can borrow the DVD. All right. So, Stoll, moving on. What is your number eight?
Okay. Now, these are movies that I, again, like, these are actually, like, of quality. You can actually enjoy them. Not a great movie here, but still something that was a lot of fun to watch, especially if you go with a bunch of guys. I'm talking about Expendables 2.
yes.
Not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but just a lot of fun, a lot of jokes, a lot of references to other movies, a great man movie, just tons of explosions, tons of death, tons of blood. So I really enjoyed it, and it's nothing, like I said, nothing great like in critique-wise, but just a really fun movie to go and watch. So it made it on number eight.
Awesome. Yeah, I did enjoy The Expendables 2 quite a bit. I mean, it was.
I believe the three of us actually went and saw it.
We did. That was actually one of the things that was the inspiration for the podcast because I was.
So
I was
much discussion.
I was talking about how I had this idea for a podcast, and it was as we were talking about how much we like really enjoyed the movie, and then I was like, you know, I had this idea for a podcast. We were just going to sit around, and you guys were like, let's on board. So, Expendables 2, man movie of the year. Ridiculous, stupid, crazy. That is what one of the reasons this podcast exists.
It inspired this podcast.
Yeah, we were sitting in the parking lot, and we said, well, let's go do a podcast. And we got together later after the movie, and we made it happen. So
absolutely. And then we ended up going to Looper, and the rest is history. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. This is what I wanted the first one to be like. Honestly, I thought the first one was kind of a letdown, quite honestly. But this is the movie. It had all the stars I really wanted. You had Arnold in there more. You had Bruce in there more. You had Chuck Norris in there. I mean, come on. This was, and the movie was
great
stupid.
Cameo.
The movie was stupid, but it was very aware that it was incredibly stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And that was what made it fun. The first one kind of took itself too seriously. This one was ridiculous, had all the stars, and it blatantly made fun of itself. I mean, the fact that Arnold and Bruce at one point were in Sylvester Stallone all trading one-liners from the other movies and stuff. I mean, yippee-ki-yay was, you know, I mean, you get stuff like that. And he's like, or Arnold's like, I'm back. And Bruce is like, you've been back one too many times, pal. You know, just, come on. Stuff like that.
Yeah, and as we said, we all saw this together. We even saw it with a few other guys.
Great man movie. Just,
I mean, gather all your guy friends and go leave your girlfriends at home if you have them. This is...
Unless they like killing.
Unless they like killing.
Because the body count is obscenely high.
So high.
We were like, let's try to count. Literally within the first 5 minutes, we were like, yeah, we can't count.
Lost already. But, I mean, tons of explosions. I mean, I feel like I was kind of watching a Transformers movie almost with all the explosions.
Except for it was, like, more fun.
Yes, it was a lot more fun. Like we've already said, great cast of actors, action actors, all together. I mean, you've got just about everyone you could really think of. But, I mean, definitely one that all guys should check out, definitely.
Van Damme is amazing.
Oh, yes.
He plays a villain named...
Great villain.
Villian. I know. I didn't see it coming either. Bama, what was your number eight?
All right, my number eight, very, very good movie. When I saw the trailer for this, I wasn't quite sure about it, but I believe this was another one that we all went and saw together. It was Chronicle.
Several of us went.
Several of us went.
Yeah,
we went.
Get to catch that one with
okay,
us.
Okay,
yeah.
But a lot of us went and saw this. I really enjoyed this because it was kind of like, what if people today got superpowers? How would that work, and what would they do with it? How would they use the power that they've been given? Would they use it for good? Would they use it for evil? Would they be selfish and hide it? Or would they just blatantly use it whenever the heck they want it? So, you know, a little kind of a little moral story going on underneath there. Some great camera angles in this, because with the superpowers, this kid can, you know, make a camera levitate, and he's like, you know, filming everything in different perspectives and stuff. Although this is a kind of a found film,
quote unquote, it's a lot. I felt like it was a lot more. It wasn't like shaky cam found footage,
yes.
But it was like, I mean, there was times it shook, but it was more or less like a. It just felt more like a movie than a found footage film.
Right.
But it also had that style where, yeah, you have the camera that's technical. Everything's you're seeing through the camera.
Everything is, like, being filmed by a average Joe person. Definitely a really good one. I think it's, what is it, three of the guys get these superpowers.
Yeah, three of the guys get powers. None of them really hung out before then.
Yeah,
until they all got their powers, and then they all start hanging out. And one of them is kind of a sadistic kid and starts experimenting with it for evil. But it's also, he's also still very sympathetic, which is interesting.
They don't just
make him out pure evil kid. He feels he's a kid who's been abused and he's got a rough home life. And then basically these popular kids, particularly was it Steve? I can't remember. One of his friends is more popular and tries to bring him into that popular realm. Because they get really good friends, but it just doesn't work out. And then he feels rejected, and it's actually a very interesting character development. I agree with you. Chronicle was one that was an honorable mention here. I really liked that movie a lot. Big surprise earlier this year. I mean, even when I saw the trailer, I was like, found footage, gimmick, superhero, whatever. But no, it was a great movie. I really liked the cast, and I did like the very creative use of the...
Not really any big names.
Oh, no, these were all, very little-known people. I don't even know off the top of my head. It was very good
for actors that I've never even heard of before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree. Great movie, folks. Definitely check it out. This one's out on DVD, out on video. Go rent it. It might even be in the Redbox still, if you can find it. Gwendolyn's creative takes on superheroes. So with all the superhero movies, very creative take. It kind of takes it back to the roots of superhero genre without all the origin story. It's an origin story, except for it doesn't follow the cutout of an origin story that we've seen in comic book movies in the last 10 years. So definitely worth a look. Great special effects, too, for such a very low-budget movie. But yeah, I totally recommend that one. All right. I think we're going to go ahead and move on to my number 7, Moonrise Kingdom. Moonrise Kingdom is a Wes Anderson film. Wes Anderson, you might know from Life Aquatic or The Fantastic Mr. Fox, or he's done a number of movies. He's got a very distinct style. He's very witty, very dry, very smart brand of humor. That it's funny, but it's not like laugh out loud hilarious as much. But this movie is basically a coming-of-age story about these two children who fall in love on an island. They're both very lonely children, and they're running away. One of them is an orphan, and one of them is a girl whose parents are having some problems, and she's able to see it. So they both run away together. And basically, you kind of get like a coming of age, a slice of life movie in this area. But it's not just like that; it's a Wes Anderson slice of life movie. It's a lot of fun. It's got a great cast. You got guys like Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Jason Schwartzman. I mean, just lots of great actors in here. A lot of fun. Honestly, maybe one of the best family movies I saw this year. Because I mean, just the characters were so likable, and even though they were all definitely flawed people and they all made mistakes, they were all incredibly likable and charming, and it was a really funny movie too. I'm not gonna lie, just not your typical Hollywood comedy. You know, I don't know. I don't think either one of you guys caught this one. It was a smaller movie that got kind of like a.
I didn't really hear a lot about it until you actually said something like you were going to see it the next day. I'd never even heard of that before.
Yeah, I went and caught this one in the matinee by myself. I was like, because it hadn't had any hype and it just came to the warm because it was one of those like on demand movies that didn't go wide. It slowly was released in more and more theaters, so I went and caught that on my own. Great movie, great little movie. I don't know really how to sell it, other than it's just a really good family movie about people, kids falling in love together in the 1960s and trying to live in the real world. So, Stoll, what is your number 7?
My number 7 is a movie that I actually was interested in when it came out, but it kind of popped out of nowhere. It was The Gray with Liam Neeson. Just a good survival story, basically. What happens is him and a bunch of men, they're all oil drillers. They get their plane crashes over, and is they in Alaska or
it's somewhere up in that area. Yeah.
It's very very cold under 0 degree temperatures.
Probably Canadian territory.
So and they crash and they're just trying to survive, and they happen to crash close to like a wolf. Packed in, and so there's just them trying to survive the weather and the wilderness. And very surprising, like what was actually in this. I thought it was just going to be like a lot of action, a lot of gore. Actually, it was very psychological. Definitely dived into his character a lot. It was basically a character story of how he went from where he was at the beginning and where he ended up at the end.
I'm totally going to spoil bomb this one, so yeah, close your ears for a second. Because I'm more specific, you said where he's at the beginning. This man, at the very beginning of the movie, is about to kill himself when he hears a wolf howl, and he's a guard of these oil drillers, so that wolf howling keeps him from killing himself. And then what happens is the man who wants to kill himself when he gets in this plane crash ends up becoming the leader of these survivors, and he has to rediscover his will to survive, and he has to ask the questions to himself, why do I want to survive? Do I want to survive? And, like, you see this man who had nothing left and everything was gone from him and he had no hope left in the world, going from that to deciding that his life was worth fighting for. And obviously not going to spoil the very end of the movie, but there's totally a great character study. There's some truly heartbreaking moments in this movie. Like, you get these guys developed and then some of them don't make it, and it was really intense and really moving.
All the men are like what you would call like manly men. They're all like tough and gruff and don't talk about emotion. And so it's definitely interesting to see all the dynamics between the men, how different ones try to like act certain ways because they're in a group of men, you know. So, but definitely a very good movie, not just for men by any stretch of the it was a very surprising and it came out of nowhere. I didn't realize it was coming out till about it came out.
I heard some buzz about, caught it a matinee, and I was like, wow, this movie actually is really good. It came out like January or February. I think it was February last year. I mean, like very beginning of the year. I had no buzz for it until it was actually out and I was hearing word of mouth, you know, this is worth checking out. And now it's on Netflix on demand, by the way.
Yeah, so that's where I actually got to see it, was on Netflix. So,
Bam, did you get to catch The Grey?
No, I have not been able to catch it. I've been told that I should watch it. Mostly for some of the reasons y'all have said. So I like Liam Neeson. It's good to see him do something that's not Taken.
Yes, and he does kill wolves, by the way.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. All right, Bama, moving on. What is your number 7?
All right, my number 7, I know some people won't agree with, but I really enjoyed it. I've been telling people that I think this is the best book to film adaptation that I've ever seen, ever, and that would be The Hunger Games. I know a lot of people have a lot of problems with this film, but I mean, honestly, I can look beyond some things because I know and understand that you can't put everything from a book into a film, and especially with this book series, a lot of it is inside the head of Katniss. You can't really project too much that way into a film, but I think, you know, overall they did exactly what needed to be done with this film. Yeah. I would rank this pretty high if we were grading it.
All right. Well, I'm gonna have what's a little dialogue about this movie, okay?
I did not get to see this movie, so I'm gonna be absent from this dialogue.
All right. So I feel like I'm in the middle. I'm not a hater, good. But I don't hate you. But this movie has some problems, okay? That I think if you read the book, it's very easy to overlook because you're like, oh, I know exactly what she's thinking. But if you hadn't seen, she does some like absolutely stupid or seemingly ridiculous stuff. Like some of the action she's just like, why would she think about that? Or her relationship with Peter, you're like, woman, what the heck? You're like, do you like, what the crap are you doing? Which, of course, if you've read the book, it's justifiable. But on the outside, as a movie,
she's almost a confused teenager. Like,
there is no explanation for why she's trying to sell this relationship. And then what's up with Liam Hemsworth over there, Thor's younger brother? I mean, what the crap's going on over there?
She's a confused teenager.
And my other problem with this movie is this should have been a rated R movie. I understand why it's not. It should have been a rated R movie, and the violence shouldn't have been like, shake a cam. Oh, what? There's a blood somewhere. Oh, there's dead bodies. Okay. All right. You couldn't see the action in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it was, and I understand why it was like that. They wanted to keep this PG-13 because obviously it's a young adult novel, but I'm sorry. This is a movie, this is a book / movie about kids from the age of, like, was it 11 or 12?
Getting 12 to 18.
12 to 18, getting thrown in an arena to kill each other in bloody, gruesome ways. And this movie, they try to hide the blood, they hide the gore a little bit. I know the sequel is going to involve adults a little more, so maybe they'll be able to get with more violence. But I was like, this could have been a much better movie had they had the balls to go.
I can't remember. What was Battle Royale rated?
That was R?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because that's basically the same concept for this. And so much more,
blood
and violence in that one.
So much more blood and violence.
But I mean, like I said, I've read the books. I understand the movie a little bit better than people who have not read the books and just went to see the movie. I actually read like all the books right before the movie came out.
I did the same.
So, but I'm really enjoyed the books, really enjoyed this movie. It kind of depends on if you like a futuristic dystopia-ish place film, you would probably like it.
Yeah, I'd say so. Second problem. Second point I want to talk about in that. So, best book adaptation ever. So, no Lord of the Rings.
I never read Lord of the Rings. Or Hobbit. I'm sorry. I never got to read them when I was a kid.
Okay, to that point, well, I guess I would close that argument then, because I don't know exactly everything you've read.
Yes.
But there's a lot of really great adaptations out there that are much better than this one.
Most of the book to movie adaptations have been the Harry Potter series.
Okay.
And of course, you
and
know,
some of those are a mess.
There's a lot that they've changed.
Oh yeah, throughout yeah, for
those.
Sure, for sure.
And my most hated ever was Percy Jackson.
Oh gosh,
worst adaptation ever.
We're not gonna Percy Jackson.
I really don't want to talk about that anymore. Let's go to your number six.
Number six is. Dremel, please. No, I'm just joking. Don't do a dremel. The Dark Knight Rises. Okay, folks. I consider myself a movie critic. I write, you know, but Batman, I'm a fan first, okay? And I, as a fan, I love this movie. Does this movie have crazy plot holes, weird pacing, and things that you, like, giant, some things you have to just, like, really suspend your belief on? Yes, I would admit since then. But I don't care, because I got to see Bruce Wayne, his lowest low. This guy becomes bankrupt, he's got nothing. His freaking butler, his little butler leaves him. Okay, granted, it's Bruce Wayne's own fault, but that's beside the point. All right? We get to see Anne Hathaway's electrifying performance as Catwoman.
She made
the role her own, and I think she totally redefined the character for a generation who really could only really associate with, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer, who was okay. We get to see Tom Hardy's Bane, which a lot of people didn't like, but I freaking loved. I loved the voice. I got chills when he was talking on some of the times. And we got to see the bat get broken. I mean, I'm talking fanboy jaw drop moment when I saw that. I was like, you know, I know Bane's in the movie, but I don't think they're actually going to do it just because it doesn't seem like something no one would do. But then when he's beating the crap out of him, he rips his mask off and then he says, "Did I break your spirit? But now you're bought," and he picks him up over his head. I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to do it. And then he did it. Right, broke him over his knee. And jaw hit the floor. At that moment, I was like, this movie's freaking amazing.
So good.
So awesome. I love this movie. And you know what else I love about this movie? It was a great conclusion to the Dark Knight trilogy. Maybe, I think there's a lot of debate for which one's the best. I mean, but I think the fact that it's even debatable is worth mentioning, because most third movies to great trilogies usually end up being subpar. Not necessarily bad, but there are some pretty bad ones. But there's very few third movies that are great like their other predecessors. And I think this one's great. And I think that what Christopher Nolan has done here, he has made something that is so much bigger and greater than superhero movies. He has made characters that are believable and that stand toe-to-toe with some of the greatest we've ever seen in cinema. So for me, he has made comic book movies that transcend the genre and prove to be a true art form on its own right. So that is my fan spiel. I mean, I know we've all seen this one.
I mean, I definitely agree with everything you said. A fantastic, fantastic movie. It made number two on my list. There's only one movie out we'll get to later that surpassed it for me. But fantastic film. I've watched it three times in theaters, and I own it already on Blu-ray, so... Amazing.
Can I say fanboy moment too. You hardcore fanboys out there, I didn't just go to buy this movie on Blu-ray at midnight.
You told us already, I think.
On the podcast. I'm going to tell you again. I'm a real fan. I didn't stay up late. Staying up late is irresponsible and hard to do. I didn't do just that. I got up at 7 in the morning to go to Best Buy at 8 so I could get the Steelbook edition. Sorry, Mr. Stoll. Totally cut you off. Now go ahead.
No, that was it. I completely agree with everything you said. Fantastic. Watched it three times in theaters, and it was worth it every single time.
I've seen it six times. Three times in theaters.
I've seen the movie five times, but...
I think I've seen it four times, twice in the theater. This one makes my top five. I'm not going to reveal exactly where it's at until we get there. But definitely great film. Like you already said, great ending to a great three-movie series. And arguably... I mean, you can just go back and forth as to which one's better, the third or the second one. I don't want to throw in the first one in there because that's a real big setup.
Yeah, but I think there's still an argument to be made there. I mean, and I'm not. I think I wouldn't put it too low behind them. Right, right. I would say there's definitely an argument to be made, but I won't disagree with you. I mean, usually that's the one that doesn't get quite as cast.
But definitely, second and third one are. I mean, they're neck and neck with each other as far as, you know, acting abilities of not only just Bruce Wayne and Batman, but the villains from those two. I mean. Heath Ledger's Joker, phenomenal.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And you know, Tom Hardy. I love Tom Hardy. Going to be the next big thing. Well, he pretty much is
the next big thing right now.
But Tom Hardy as Bane. When I heard that, and you know, I was always thinking of Eames from Inception. Yeah. I was like, how is this going to happen? But see, they kind of trick you because even while he was in Inception, he was still rather large and muscular. Yeah. He was just hidden because he was wearing these jackets all the time. So you couldn't see how big he actually was. And I was like, this is not going to work. But then I saw that first picture of him as Bane, blew my mind. Yeah. And so I was like, definitely going to check this one out. So very, very great film.
Yeah, and the more I think about it, the more excited I get. Like, set piece after set piece. That opening prologue was just, I mean, it still blows my mind. I've seen this thing six times. I've seen the making of on the Blu-ray, but it still blows my mind. The sky pirating, they go in and Bane's on the plane, and then they take it over with the FBI, and it still just blows my mind. And they actually freaking drop the plane, okay? That's all I'm saying. But yeah, I mean, just lots of things I love about this movie. Problems, yes, but so does every movie. And
I don't care about the problems.
And I don't, you know what, I think there's so much great here that it's so easy to overlook the problems and be like, holy crap, Batman, you just made one of the greatest films
you've ever really made. Don't care about the problems in this film. I love it.
All right, Stoll, what is your number six?
Well, actually, I was surprised when I actually got to doing these films that this movie did not make the top five. It's actually one of the last movies I saw, which was The Hobbit. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was really good. It was exactly what I expected it to be. It didn't blow my mind and wasn't comparable to Lord of the Rings. Like, I thought it wouldn't be. But, you know, I was a little bit impressed. I thought it was going to be a lot duller than it actually was. The first act was extremely slow, but once you pass that first act, it was actually pretty engaging. And I thought what they needed to do, you could tell that they're trying to stretch it out. Like we've said on here before, it's three parts. It really shouldn't be three parts. It could be done as a very long one, maybe a two-parter, but three parts is almost pushing it. So, but in the end, it was not as slow as I thought it was going to be overall. So I enjoyed it, and it made my number six.
Yeah, I reviewed the movie for my blog and the More Monthly. You know, it's an okay movie. It's a good movie. I was satisfied, but I wasn't impressed, and I felt like everything I expected was there. I was expecting pacing problems, and it didn't exceed that. It had pacing problems. I expected it to be too long, and it was too long, you know? Yeah. But it also did good. I expected to see that Gollum scene with Bilbo, which was amazing. That was the best part of the whole movie.
Amazing. Scene stole the movie.
That movie could have been a giant turd and had that one scene and been like, oh, watch it. But, I mean, it was a decent movie on top of the fact that it had that amazing scene in there. Lots of slow stuff, and I think I'm with Stoll. Yeah. I think this could have been a really great 3.5 hour epic, but they kind of decided to take the let's make as much money as possible route. Yeah. So,
well, like I've already said, I have not read The Hobbit. I know two of you had, so I had no idea what was going to happen in this going into it. I really enjoyed it. It made my top five. By the way, I thought it looked really good. I know it. It kind of changed from The Lord of the Rings because The Lord of the Rings had a lot of practical effects.
Yeah, that was one of my problems actually.
For what they could do practical effects for, they definitely did. And the things that were just too unreal to do practical effects for, they did CGI. And with this one, they did much more CGI.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a problem with it. I know, Caleb, you didn't really like a lot of the CGI
It took me out of it several times. There's, like, a lot of the orcs are CGI, and, like, it's just, like, you're so used to in Lord of the Rings where they're, like, it's makeup, and it, like, looks real and gritty, and this one was like, oh, it looks like it's animated, you know? Yeah. Not that it looks bad, it's just like when, you know, you're walking in, you're expecting one thing, and you get, like, this CGI, which you're like, for me, I just couldn't help the fact I'm like, oh, I'm watching CGI.
Yeah. Well, for me, not a problem. Like I've said, didn't read the books. I'm not as I'm not tied to it as much as you two were. But I still think this was a very good film. All
right. Well, it makes my honorable mentions barely. I enjoyed it. Fun ride. By the way, saw this in HFR, the high frame rate, 48 frames per second. Yeah. Me and Bama, went and saw it together.
Called it.
And I can't recommend in good conscience. I thought it looked terrible, actually. I thought it looked very unmovie-like. It didn't look like a movie. It looked like...
Wide shots looked really
good. Some of the wide shots looked great.
A lot of the close-ups,
Anytime they were close-up, they were walking around the Hobbit. Oh, they were marching on the mountain. I was like... Just there was a lot of stuff that I was like, ooh.
I felt my motion sickness start to rise a little bit.
Okay, think about it like this. There's a couple of the things I can compare it to. One of them is if you take motion blur completely out, this is what this movie looks like. So anytime the camera panned, it made me sick. I was like, oh, it just looks nasty. And then the second thing, the best comparison I think of is when you walk into a TV, like a Best Buy or Walmart, and you see those TVs that have the motion blur turned on, and they have the really high refresh rates, and you're like, something that looks almost too good. Like, something's off about it. It looks like the movements look unnatural and fat over fat. Like, the whole movie felt like it was in, like, 1.5 flash forward.
Yeah.
And like, it looked like it looked cheaper, too. It didn't feel cinematic. It felt like I made a movie. But that's the HFR.
You have made a movie.
Well, okay. It's my, like,
a movie that I started.
You did,
sir.
Start that. Okay, no, sorry. It's like I made a movie with the budget out of my bank account.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Let me refresh that. I could make a, if I had this much money, I could totally make a movie, but, you know.
Oh, man. All right, so now, to my number six. I don't think either one of you, saw this movie. Very good, action. Almost gangster-like type film, Lawless.
I did see
starring,
this.
Oh, you did see this.
I did
okay.
see this.
Starring Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf. Those were really the big names in this one. And, you know, this is Tom Hardy being...
What's her name? Jessica Chastain or whatever? Jennifer Chastain? Whatever.
Yes.
She was in it, too.
Yes. This is Tom Hardy being just the baddest guy that you've ever can think of. I mean, these Tom Hardy and Shia LaBeouf's character, and there's another character that they all play, three brothers, and they're like these invincible brothers. Like, you can beat them up, you can shoot them in the chest 10 times, you can, you know, cut their throats, and they're still gonna live because they are the embodiment of, you know, being immortal. Being just the most bad A people you've ever met, and it really plays up, especially for Tom Hardy's character, how invincible he can be. It does end on a slight funny note with his character, but overall,
how did he survive that?
I have no
idea. That's all I got to question. This guy, okay, this guy is the effing Terminator. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Like, he gets shot, stabbed, his throat gets slit. I mean, like, if it's bad and you can think about it, it happened to him.
Yeah.
And he's still...
But his death is very comical at the end. But it's really good. If you like shoot-'em-up action-type films, you would definitely enjoy this one.
It's definitely... Think of a mob movie, except for... Instead of about, like, drugs or things, think of moon... It's a moonshine.
Yeah.
These guys are in the
South. Moonshine is the
drug.
That
is the drug in the movie. And it is set in the South. Mm. It's people in the South, out in the backwoods.
Yeah.
Smuggling moonshine.
Lots of distilleries and stuff. It has even Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman plays a mobster in that movie.
And phenomenal character from him. He's not in this very much, but I did enjoy his character.
Yeah.
in this.
This one was all right. Didn't make my honorable mentions, but I enjoyed it. I red boxed after it came out. I think it's catching theaters. Definitely enjoyable, and I agree with you on most points. It was a fun little ride, little movie, and I thought it was a cool little mashup, putting that familiar genre in a different place. So, all right, moving on to my number five, Argo. Argo was a great movie. It was the historical thriller about the Iranian hostage crisis, and there's I believe 7 captives that got away before the other captives got caught, and basically they get out and they flee to a Canadian ambassador's home, and they stay there disguised as Canadians, and eventually basically what the movie is about, Ben Affleck stars a guy who has a crazy idea to smuggle these people out as a film crew scouting locations in Iran. So basically, the Americans have no good way of getting these people out. So he comes with this crazy idea, and it's so crazy that it had to be true. This has to be true. Like, the fact that, you know, it's based on history, like, this is just an obscene thing. He has to hire a real film producer and find a real script and all this stuff, and like, he has to sell it for Hollywood and get the paper to buy it to like create a whole cover story and everything. And then once he does it, he has to disguise himself as a director who goes to Iran to scout for films, disguised as a Canadian. And what he does is he creates false IDs to kind of break these people out. And really great movie. It's really intense, despite the fact that we know how this thing ends. I mean, I'm talking, I was on the edge of my seat throughout this movie. And I don't know how else to say this movie, that it was just really satisfying. When I got down, I was just like, man, that was just a great movie all around. Like, there was nothing I could really complain about. A couple nitpicks we get real here, but the acting is strong, the characters are strong. And it's intense, and it moves fast. It's always moving. It's one I'd love to catch again. I haven't had a chance to see yet. But just it's just one that I think, it feels like a classic Hollywood masterpiece. It just feels great. And you know, kudos to Ben Affleck for pulling throwing his hand out again with probably his best film yet. I think he's a very underrated director who's mainstream, according to mainstream standards, I think he's underrated. But he is a critical, he knows exactly what he's doing, and he's making some phenomenal movies out there, unlike a lot of people in the industry these days. So not too many people can spin a tale like him. And I don't believe neither one of you guys caught that one, did you?
Nope, sorry.
I did not get a chance to see it.
I highly recommend that for all you out there, especially you history nerds out there like me. So, all right, Stoll, what was your number five?
Well, my number five is something we already talked about. It was Cabin in the Woods. Phenomenal, phenomenal movie, like we said. Hilarious. You need to check it out. Especially if you enjoy horror movies, you definitely need to watch it.
Yeah, no excuses.
Probably could have been higher on my list, actually. My top five was a little bit hard for me to determine, so it could have been higher on my list than five, but Cabin in the Woods.
Gotcha. Bama, what is your number five?
My number five, I love superhero movies. And this one was very much under the radar, especially with some of the superhero films that came out in 2012 and soon to be coming out in this year. But The Amazing Spider-Man, I really enjoyed this, mostly because it was very different from the previous series. Now, I will say that the big problem with the previous series was the third one. It just didn't do the whole series justice. But I think this movie really kind of went back to the comic book and an early cartoon age of Spider-Man, where he is actually in high school for when he gets his superpowers. A lot of great action scenes. The villain could have been done a little bit better, honestly. The ending seemed a little weird. A lot of people discuss on who the next person is going to be in the series of Spider-Man. Everyone's got a different theory of who it's going to be. Could it be Norman Osborn? Could it be, you know, someone completely different that we've never seen in the Spider-Man movie before? I honestly don't care. I think that this series is going to blow the previous series out of the water. Sorry, Tobey Maguire. I like you as an actor, but during your series of Spider-Man, you only had one or two emotions. You had a normal emotion, and you had a angry, sad / emotion. And I think this new kid is just going to do so much better with his series.
Yeah, I like this movie. You know, kind of middle of the road on this one. I kind of troubled by the fact that it's a reboot and you basically had the same basic points you knew going to the movie. Like, okay, we're going to see this again, and this again. But it is an interesting new take. And, you know, what really sells the movie is Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. They have some great chemistry. Both of them are doing great. And I am totally with you. I really like that they're keeping this in high school. Mm-hmm. Like, the first original Spider-Man movie and a lot of the iterations, they jump ahead to college really quickly.
Yeah, he starts off in high school and then quickly goes into college. Right. I think in the second one, he's in college.
No, in the first movie, he's in college by the second half of the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But what I really like about this one is it sticks more close to the comics. Like, they're actually the first couple, two or three movies might be in high school, which is great because that's what it's like in the comic books. And I'm interested to see where it goes. I think this was an okay movie. It was solid. I'm really excited. I think there's a lot. Now they've gotten all those boxes checked, so to speak, we can know we have potential for a sequel that's going to take this series in a totally different direction, hopefully. Because I felt like this movie, in a lot of ways, did rehash a lot of the same ideas and themes.
Well, I mean,
aside from just the origin story, like, yeah. even the Lizard was portrayed a lot like Norman Osborn was in the first movie, being kind of the schizophrenic bad guy type of thing. And, you know, I had problems.
Which I don't think that was a quality of the Lizard, was it? That he was kind of schizophrenic?
Not really, no. He had two different personalities.
It was more of a thing that he couldn't control.
He couldn't control, exactly, yeah. He didn't ever talk to it or anything like that.
I don't think so.
You know, but I love the fact they brought Gwen Stacy in, and man, I really hope they build up the Gwen Stacy.
They better not kill her in the second film.
No, I want them to wait until the third one. All right, spoilers, if you haven't read the comic, if you're not familiar with the Spider-Man comic books, one of the most iconic deaths in all of comic book history is Gwen Stacy. When Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, is fighting the Green Goblin, and the Green Goblin drops Gwen Stacy off the bridge. Now, Spider-Man catches her, he shoots a web and catches her, so he thinks she's alive. He beats the Goblin, he goes, and she's dead when he picks her up. And there's like this, he holds her in his arms, and like for a while, he thinks that he might have been the one who killed her and everything. And she's one of those comic book characters they don't bring back. She is dead. And then one of like two or three characters, her and Uncle Ben, like there's a...
Yeah.
And I'm talking comics.
There's very few.
Not even just like...
That don't come
not
back.
Not even just, I mean, comic books at large, just very few that don't come back like that. And so my hope is that they build up to the Green Goblin by the third movie, and then we see the crazy death at the end of the third movie where you're like, oh, and like, you know, because I mean, I think a lot of audiences won't be expecting it. I hope that's what happens. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was it was a decent first movie. I feel like it was kind of a rehash in a lot of ways. Understandably
it's,
so.
Yeah, it's to be expected. Yeah,
but I feel like now that they've kind of, like I said, they've kind of checked that box. We've done all this with the character. Now we can do something new. So, and I hope that's what they end up doing.
Now we can make this the right way.
All right. Now, we're going to move on to my number four, which is a movie all you listeners to the podcast may be familiar with. Looper, because this is the first movie we talked about on our little preview segment of our podcast. And Looper is one of the most creative movies I've seen this year, if not the most creative movie I've seen this year. It's got a really unique premise about an assassin who kills people, sent back from the future to kill. And you can go back and listen to our original podcast. We kind of talk about the plot and everything. But I love this movie for a lot of different levels. I like it because it's original. I like it because you've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt and you've got Bruce Willis. I like it because it's time travel, and I love the concept of time travel. I love that this movie capitalizes on all the stuff that presents early in the movie. And I love that they write all the characters that when the movie gets to its ending, where there's a standoff between your characters and there's a big moral dilemma, that you have that argument with yourself. You're like, but who's right? What's the right decision to do here? What is the right thing to do? And I thought this was an excellent movie, and I loved it. And, I mean, jaw hitting the floor at the end. I mean, there's just a lot of great stuff here. So, we've already talked about our thoughts on quite a bit, but a little refresher here. Stola, what did you think about this movie?
I loved it. I have it on Blu-ray. I got it on Blu-ray the day after it came out, and I've watched it again. And I was actually surprised. I thought I might not like it as much the second time, but watching it the second time, I liked it just as much as I did the first time. I didn't think the rewatch value would be that good, but it actually was very good. Still got goosebumps at the end. Still definitely a very good movie, and it is in my top four. I'm not going to tell you where it is in my top four.
Dead
but it does make it, and I... love this movie, and it was a movie we got that started this podcast too. So it means a little bit more, I think, for us in that sense. But great, great movie. If you have not seen it, you need to watch this movie.
Yeah, and it is in Redbox. It went straight to Redbox, folks. It's out, and I still did pick it up the day after it came out. So, Bama, wait, quick thoughts on
Looper. Like we've already said in the very first podcast we did, great, phenomenal film, great story. Of course, one of my favorite parts is they tell you that, yes, there is time travel involved in this movie, but you don't need to think about it. Don't think about it.
Right.
And it works. But really, a lot of good concepts in this film. I've said this a lot, I know, but overall, great film.
Yeah, and I think with the time travel thing, I've had some arguments with a few of those naysayers out there.
It doesn't matter.
Well, the thing is, the time travel movie, it makes enough sense. I mean, it's one that's on the surface, and like the basic logic works. It's when you start to analyze every single little detail that, of course, it's not going to work out. And I think the movie is very aware of this, in which, of course, obviously we've talked about, there's at least twice off the top of my head in which the movie says, one where the guy says, time travel just scrambles your brains if you think about it. And then
the narrator says it, and then two of the characters themselves say
it. I mean, Bruce Willis practically yelling at the audience, listen, man, I'm not going to sit here and talk about time travel. I'll be sitting there drawing diagrams and stuff all day. Listen, if you like time, this is a great time travel movie. I throw it up there with something along the lines of 12 Monkeys or Time Bandits or,
Back to the Future 2?
No, not Back to the Future 2.
That movie was awesome.
That movie is illogical. It's not as good as the original.
Because of the way that they talk about time travel. We're not going to get into that.
We're not going to get into the time travel argument. But what I'm saying is, this is a great movie. If you don't like the way the time travel works, don't let it ruin it for you, because this movie isn't about the time travel. I mean, it is the basic plot device that perpetuates the movie. But it's not something it is not the point of the movie at all. The point of the movie is to have a younger self versus his older self, and what would happen, what would that look like if both of them thought they were right? So, anyway, that is my number four. I thought it was fantastic. All right, Stoll.
My number four is Avengers. This movie came out in May, and actually we went and saw it at midnight, IMAX, with...
I've never heard of it. Is it?
Dude, you were there. You dressed up as Clark Kent when we went. Okay, so
dress up as a DC character.
Clark Kent. You know, that's right. We got to represent. You know what's funny though? Batman showed up there too. Yes. And then when he showed up, I thought everyone was going to boo him, and then everyone started clapping for him. So you know.
Yeah, but you know, you're the reason why we lost that picture contest, because you were in our background.
No, I was in the background. I was in the middle. I was like, I was the centerpiece.
You were still there. I mean, we had a Hulk, we had Captain America, we had a Thor. We didn't have a Black Widow.
We lost because there was a little kids out there. Picture. All the kids were like, it's so cute. That's a terrible costume. Like. Come on now.
Anyway,
I just to say, I dressed up as Captain America,
and I was Clark Kent.
Loser.
Gosh,
overpowered.
Avengers. I don't know if I saw it. Can you explain it to me?
Can I go?
I just want you to explain the movie to me. Okay. I don't know if I've heard of it. Okay. I don't know if it was a big movie or anything.
This is a movie that came out in May. We took a big group of like 20 people, went and saw it together. Like I said, we dressed up. We had a fun time with it. And really fun, really good movie. Like, really not much I can say was like bad about it for what it was trying to do. Very fun action movie that was just fun. Very funny when it was trying to be funny. Absolutely hilarious when it was trying to be funny and... just a lot of really good action. Obviously, the acting was really good, and just a fun action movie for the whole family to go see. So, that made my number four.
This movie really surprised me because it's, I mean, you've got people like Chris Evans, big star. He's done a lot of different types of films, he's very well known. You've got Robert Downey Jr., who is just a huge star.
Definitely Tony Stark.
Tony Stark embodiment.
He is Tony Stark.
You've got Chris Hemsworth, who is, up and coming. I mean, you've got all these really big personalities coming into this film. And like, I was thinking about, you know, when I first heard about this film and how many people they were going to put in it, I was like, how in the world are they going to get all these people, one, to work together, two, to split time in a film and have enough face time for them to be in it, and, of course, three, to pay every single person in this movie, because, I mean, you know when you've got, I mean, some of the people I've listed off, you know they're making bank off this movie. But I think for a combination superhero film, I mean, it's something we've never really seen before. It did phenomenal for what it was trying to do. Just an all-out action film. Very, very thin storyline, I will say. That is a negative of this film. A very thin storyline, not much to it. It's, we'll gather up and then we'll beat the crap out of the aliens coming to try and take over our world. But like Stoll said, a few funny moments, some one-liners from Tony Stark, obviously. Just some great moments between all the character interactions. So in my mind, very good film. It is very high in my top five, but we'll get to that when we get to it.
Okay, so now that I know you guys are talking about Marvel's The Avengers, okay, I was so confused, you know, I thought we were talking about
that. Yes, because DC hasn't done theirs yet.
And no, because there's that old British spy show, I thought, you know, anyway, sorry, I'm being stupid. All right, of course, lately. I like this movie a lot. I love this movie. I went and bought the Blu-ray the day it came out. Why is this movie not my top 10? Because as much because as much as I enjoyed this movie and it was a great ride and it had some amazing action set pieces, it was funny. Everything you guys have said is true. I think it balances all those characters. You know, yeah, the story's really simple and there's really nothing to it. That's really why this movie isn't in my top. It's not that there's anything wrong with it per se, as much as it's just a big spectacle. It's a lot of fun, and I love that about it.
And I've
watched this movie four or five times, and it's amazing at that. But when it comes down for me personally, best movies of the year, that type of movie is generally the movie that's not going to make the cut. Not because it's not great, not because I don't love it, but because there's just not much depth to it. So that being said, this was a freaking amazing time, great time. Saw it three times in the theaters, bought it on Blu-ray. So I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you folks have all seen it. If you're listening to this podcast, you've seen it. Come on. I mean, it's the highest grossing movie of 2012, making truckloads of money. So, all right, Bama, what is your number four?
My number four is one that we've talked about already, The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I saw it. I think we all saw it the first time, you know, on our own, by ourselves. I saw it back home in Alabama, of course. We've talked about the Warren Theater here and just how great it is. And my theater back home is pretty good. It's stadium style seating, very good digital screens, but not quite to the point of the Warren.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Warren's kind of a high standard here.
Yeah, I will say the seats are more comfortable. That's about the only thing that my theater back home.
Oh wow, that's pretty comfortable. Warren's got nice seats.
They're very comfortable. Anyway, sidetrack. And then,
by the way, this podcast was brought to you by Warner Warren Theater, greatest theater on earth. Okay,
we might as well be sponsored by this.
practically.
But you know, then we saw the High Frames together. Me and Caleb did. You know, we've talked about this quite a bit, and I really enjoyed it for my reasons. You know, because it's something I've never experienced before.
Well, I've already said enough. I've honestly said all I've got to say about The Hobbit. So, Stoll, we get on The Hobbit. All right, moving on to my number three, Cloud Atlas, a movie that nobody this year saw except for me, apparently.
I really want to see this movie really badly. I'll just throw that out there.
I'll throw this out there. I don't care.
I'll be
honest.
Right, well, this movie,
I don't care.
This movie is going to hit DVD and Blu-ray in February, so hopefully by then. All right, so February, if you haven't caught it, this movie didn't make Carly the movie. It was one of the biggest flops last year. But here's what this movie is. For me, this is a very personal connection I've got with this movie. And it reminded me a lot of how I felt about last year's excellent, magnificent Tree of Life. this very abstract spiritual movie. Now, this movie is definitely not as abstract in its execution as Tree of Life, but what it does is it takes six different storylines and ties them together, and it's and it uses these storylines that initially you get them chronologically, but after that initial go through where it's chronological, it they feed off of each other, like at any order, at any time, they switch back and forth. And what it does, it's like an, the way I describe it, it's beautiful. It's like an orchestra. Like, they all work. It's like each one of the stories is an instrument. None of them on their own is particularly spectacular, but when you get them together, playing and working together, like as a group, as an orchestra, it just sounds amazing. Like, just incredible. And this movie does a lot of really, really cool stuff. It's got ambition unlike I have seen in any movie ever. Ever. I mean, just the huge, huge scope. Six storylines over thousands of years with so many different characters. And these characters are played by some of the same actors. Different actors playing different storylines. And, like, it kind of suggests some reincarnation and all the weird, you know, some of that weird stuff. But anyway, I thought this movie really had some really great spiritual insight had some truth to shed about human nature and us as human beings, and then proposes some very powerful spiritual ideas about human and our connection to a higher power and all sorts of things like that. And I was very moved by this movie, and it did, you know, it had me really thinking about why the way I view my things spiritually, and it created an emotional experience that is just, at the end, it's like, just pow, knocks it to me. Now, not everyone experienced this movie. A lot of people actually really didn't like it. A lot of the critics did not like this movie. A lot of them did. I fall in the camp that I absolutely loved it. Not to say that I didn't have problems with it, because there were issues, but this is a one-of-a-kind movie that I have to respect and that I love on a personal level. And you've got, even if you can't stand it, you gotta give them an applause. You have to applaud them for at least trying to do this story that's just unlike anything I've ever seen before. All right, Stoll, what is your number three?
My number three is a movie we've already talked about, Skyfall.
Skyfall, 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 Skyfall. Oh, sorry.
Honestly, like, Skyfall, Avengers, Cabin in the Woods, they all could have moved around, my three, four, and five. My top two are my top two, but all of them could have moved around. I enjoyed all of them close to the same. But Skyfall was, like, really good. I actually haven't seen a lot of Bond movies, so I don't have a lot to compare it to the old stuff, but really enjoyed it. Thought it was really good. Like I said before, the villain, absolutely spectacular. One of my favorite parts of the movie. So yeah, and it was kind of special for me because I got to see it kind of in a special way. So I got to see it early, which I'd never been able to do before. I got to see it with Caleb. So that kind of goes into a part of it.
I pulled out my press access card. Me and Stolen saw it early.
So that kind of got to give it a little nod because I got to see it in a special way, and I got to see it for free. So, you know, there Bam. You go.
That does help.
All right. I think we've hashed out Skyfall, so let's go to Bama. What is your number three?
Number three, of course, it's what we kicked off this podcast with, Looper. We've talked about it. you're probably tired of us talking about how great Looper is.
And now you don't have any excuse to see it. It's out on DVD.
Exactly.
There's no excuse.
So it's Caleb's number four, Bama's number three. Where does it lie on my list? Ooh, who knows?
Who knows?
But as we've already said, great story, great acting, just amazing.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt deserves a reward. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, rumor is right now it's getting the script is getting nominated for in a lot of different guilds for best original screenplay. So there is still hope yet that it might get nominated for. Now, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's not going to nominate, but there's hope yet that this movie might get nominated for an Oscar best supporting, for best original screenplay.
Like you said, he's probably not going to, but I just want him to get nominated.
It ain't gonna happen.
Like, he just deserved to get
nominated. He was excellent, and I loved him, and I would love to see him nominated. It's not gonna happen.
He was playing someone else, playing a character.
Yes, but Bruce Willis also modeled his performance off of how Joseph Gordon-Levitt played it. So it's a circle.
Just like modeling. The
movie. it's a loop. Inception. Oh, okay. And by the way, folks, on Oscar Talk, those nominations are coming out sometime this next week. So that'll be a thing to talk about next week. All right. We're going to go ahead and move on to my number two, Les Miserables. Wow. This movie hit right at the end of the year, December 25th, Christmas Day. And I got to see it for the first time in the front row of a movie theater. And let me just say, Hugh Jackman's chin was beautiful.
That's a little creepy.
Hey, his chin was beautiful. Anne Hathaway's eyes were...
I have one question. What? Do I have a beautiful chin?
No.
Oh, you suck.
Here, think about that.
But, okay, in all seriousness, I saw this movie a second time. It was good. It was amazing the first time. But the second time, it speaks to me of how great this movie was. Even the second time, I was still moved. Everything from the visuals, the direction, Tom Hooper's excellent direction, and you have your performances from Hugh Jackman, who is just a phenomenal Jean Valjean. And there was several different songs in which I was glossy-eyed. And there were a couple in which I freaking cried, okay? Anne Hathaway's I Dreamed a Dream is just like, literally, it takes your heart. And it shatters it. And it throws the little shattered things and throws it in the fire. And then, like, it's just like, wow. Like, just some incredible performances. And I love the soundtrack. Like, I honestly want to go out and download the soundtrack now. And either the film soundtrack or the Broadway soundtrack. You know, I will take this moment to defend Russell Crowe. Because I have heard a lot of people bash on Russell Crowe's performance, talking about how he wasn't singing and how he looked uncomfortable and everything. And I actually liked his performance, and the second time kind of confirmed it for me. He is playing Javert, who is a very cold, calculating, the guy he says he has a heart of stone at one point, character who is actually a lot more complex than that, but that is how he is on the surface. That is who he is, how he presents himself. And his voice is more robust and, like, deep and grandiose as opposed to range. He doesn't have as much range as the other characters and stuff like that. But I loved his performance. Now, I don't know if either one of you have seen this.
I really want to, especially for the musical aspect.
Yeah, I really want to as well. I haven't had a chance to see it. So it's only been out for almost not even a month yet.
Oh, no, it's so, Christmas Day. So
I haven't had a chance to see it. I haven't got to see it yet. So.
But, I recommend it. And I am not – I like musicals. I don't usually like musicals in film. I just – for some reason, a lot – particularly adaptions, because a lot of the adaptions I see aren't as good as the stage plays that I've seen. However, this one is just magnificent. I mean, just like I said, my heart cried. Beautiful and painful at the same time. Okay, I just can't explain like just how great this movie was and how moving it was. I will say some of my criticism of the movie is having read the book and studying things about the book a little more is that the movie kind of abandons the more philosophical, political, historical back knowledge that we get. So there's a lot of the deeper concepts that kind of get left behind in favor of like the more human element of the movie, which is fine because you get their human experience. And there's so many songs that are really, really great. And like I said, I want to listen to over and over. But that is Les Mis, and I hope you all can check it out sometime. It is still playing in the theater, and I can't recommend it enough. All right. Daniel Stoll, what is your number two?
Number two, movie we've already talked about, was The Dark Knight. Really, really enjoyed this movie. Saw it three times in theaters, like I said. So we've already kind of put that one to rest. That was my number two.
All right. Bama, what is your number two?
Well, for me, I had a two-way tie for first. So I'm going to press the skip button for my
skip
number two.
Button,
because huh? Technically there is no number two. There's two number ones and then a number three. So move on.
I got you. All right. We are going to my number one,
I did not see this movie number one at all.
I didn't see this movie. I didn't even know this movie existed until like July. I'm not even making this up, okay? My number one is Life of Pi. I'll tell a little story about this movie. I didn't know this movie existed. I think I'd read about it somewhere. Oh, Ang Lee is making a Life of Pi. I'd read the book and didn't understand the significance of the book. So I was like, okay, whatever.
Is it cherry pie?
I am not. No, it's not cherry pie.
Oh.
Is it like
Life of Pi?
3.14?
No. Well, actually, 3.14 does work its way into the movie a little bit, but no.
Oh.
But no. It is referenced. It is part of the reason pie is called pie. His name is actually like Pissith or something like that. And that's why he got sick of people making fun of it, because his dad named him after a pool in France, which sounds like piss. So he wanted his nickname, and he wrote like some ridiculous amount of digits for pi on the board, and then he started calling him pi. But this is an example of the movies that you least expect coming up and just like grabbing hold of you and being like, and just surprising the crap out of you and like really moving you. Because like I said, And I'm not an Ang Lee fan. I like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and I hate the Hulk. Brokeback Mountain is an okay movie. It's got its merits, but I think it's only as good. I mean, it gets as much buzz because it's controversial. So Ang Lee, you know, he's got a couple good ones out there, but I'm not a fan by any means. So I go into this movie with, like, no expectation. I'm like, I think this is going to be pretty. I catch it in 3D because the 3D was great. So I'm like, okay, going to catch in 3D, get a good spectacle. But this movie is moving. This movie is challenging the way I perceive God. This movie has me thinking about these questions. Because basically, Pi is this kid who's raised Hindu. And he finds Christ at a certain point in his life. But then he also kind of follows a point. He likes the discipline of the Muslim or the Islam faith. So he has aspects of all three of those religions and beliefs that he's studied and that he believes in, and it creates some interesting things. And basically, he's using this faith he has to survive on the raft, this raft with the tiger for 227 days. And while he's doing this is when he starts to explore these questions and his relationship with God and what does that look like. And obviously, it doesn't like lend itself just to one religion. And I think it is a movie that you can universally connect. And this is why it's number one over something like more personal to me, like Cloud Atlas, is because I feel like this movie connected so well with me. But I think it could connect to anybody because this is a movie that is PG and it deals with universal themes of faith and spirituality. Even if you're not a spiritual person, I think it's interesting to at least think about some of the ideas the movie is proposing. And I think this is a movie that has such a great appeal. And it's rated PG. The movie's rated PG. There's not really much blood. And like I said, I think, and it's a great one for family because even though all these ideas are here, you can still watch it without them. And there's definitely a scene at the end where there's kind of like a little bit of a twist and you're like, wow. And it's not just a twist for twist's sake. Like, it's actually got it's making a very legitimate statement.
It's not an M. Night Shyamalan.
No, not Shyamalan. It's making a statement about why do we as humans want God? And I think a lot of people are going to disagree with what. And the movie doesn't really tell you one way or the other, which is why I like it. But a lot of people may not agree with the proposition. But it is something very interesting to think about. And I have to say, I was really moved in a lot of ways. And it was a gorgeous movie. Some of the best 3D I've ever seen. Maybe even better than Avatar. I really think it might be better than Avatar's 3D. I mean, it was just. Some of the way he used it with the water and the boat when it sank was just, I mean, I know it's a boat sink, but like the cinematography and the way they used the 3D was just amazing. And this is one of those, I mean, it's definitely made its money and it's going to fly under a lot of radars, but I really hope everyone can check out this movie at some point, particularly if you're interested in faith and film, because this is just one that I feel like as human beings, we can all kind of connect with. And it was just excellent movie that I just didn't expect, and maybe it was no expectations made it even that much better for me. So that is Life of Pi. Daniel Stoll, you're number one.
Well, again, number one movie we've already talked about was Looper, so we don't need to really go into more of that, but I loved this movie, my favorite movie of the year, so Looper is my number one.
Alright, so I didn't have a number two, so you can pretty much bet that I have a tie for number one. Like I mentioned before, love superhero anything. Superhero films are, you know, a lot of my favorite films. So you got to think my top two are going to be superhero films. Two films that do the same thing, essentially, but do it quite differently from each other. The Avengers and Dark Knight Rises. Two of my most favorite films, both of them for very different reasons. We've talked about them before, but I'll quickly go over them. I like The Avengers at this top spot for its pure entertainment value. You know, just a lot of great set pieces on action scenes, and, you know, the story in it didn't really bother me that much of how, you know, how basic it was. Those are my reasons for liking that, and that's that. Now for Dark Knight Rises, of course, you know, you've already got the setup from two other films of the story of Batman, you know, becoming the Dark Knight and him returning in this film. And of course, especially for both of these films, phenomenal acting by everyone on board. just it really there's so much good things in both these films, honestly, that I was too torn to say I liked one better than the other.
Gotcha. Those are two tough ones. They are a lot different, for sure. And while I clearly like Dark Knight better, I think that's respectable. What we're going to do now, I said, I started with 40 movies, and I'll be honest, there was around 25 movies that I wanted to put all of them in my top 10. So I'm going to go ahead, alphabetically, in a particular order, I'm going to go ahead and write off a couple of names of other movies I really wanted to put on this list. A couple of them that were really big surprises, too, and some of them we've already talked about. Number one, the Avengers, Chronicle, Django Unchained. By the way, Django Unchained, really intense movie portraying slavery in a way that's never been done before, that I think is going to make a lot of people uncomfortable, but probably rightfully so, and maybe it should make us uncomfortable. The Grey, love The Grey. The Hobbit was okay, almost to make all mentions. Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis, we talked about in the podcast a little bit, fantastic performance, great political drama, had some problems, and it wasn't anything that was really life-changing for me. The Master by Paul Thomas Anderson. We reviewed Punch Drunk Love, and this is his latest movie, The Master. Really phenomenal acting from Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman about something that is parallels the origins of Scientology. Really great. Check it out. The Raid Redemption. Okay, this might be one of the greatest action movies I saw this year, even better than Expendables 2. The fight scenes that are choreographed, because it's not like a dumb American action movie. This is like a Chinese movie with very well choreographed fights that are just unbelievable and so much fun to watch. This one I caught Redbox, straight to DVD. Check it out. Remember, The Raid Redemption. Sinister, terrifying war movie, balls of the wall ending. Definitely kind of left me a little creeped out afterwards. Sleepwalk With Me. This was an indie movie that hit theaters earlier this year, and I was able to catch in the Oklahoma Museum of Art. Just a really honest comedy, and I really enjoyed the honesty about it. And it was like a comedian kind of telling his own story. It was like semi-autobiographical. Really funny stuff. And lastly, we already mentioned it, Wreck-It Ralph. Just one of the best family movies I saw all year. So those are some of my ones that didn't quite make the cut, but I really liked. All right, as we close out, we are going to talk about, now that we've talked about our favorite from 2012, what are three of our movies from 2013 that we are most excited to see? All right, and we're all going to take turns, as before. All right, start with Daniel. What is one movie from 2013 you're really excited about?
Star Trek Into Darkness. I have not watched a lot of Star Trek. I did see the last one they did, and I actually really enjoyed it a lot. And so I'm definitely excited about the new one, excited to see where they're going to go, what they're going to do. And like I said, I'm not a huge Star Trek fan. I haven't seen a lot of Star Trek stuff, so I don't know a lot of the history about Star Trek or anything like that. But I really enjoyed the last film, so I'm excited to see where they're going to go with this next one.
Yeah, that one looks a lot of fun. We actually I saw it in the IMAX. Hobbit and IMAX, I got to see the first 8 minutes of it, and man, it looks fun. It looks like a lot of fun. All right. Bama, one of your movies you're excited about next year?
One of my movies is actually a sequel to the number 7 movie on my list, Hunger Games: Catching Fire. I've already told you I've read all the books, so I'm really interested to see how they go about doing this film, because it's very different from the first book. The arena that they go to is awesome. I think it's probably the greatest creation I've seen in a book for this style. I'll say very very good concept. Like we've already said, adding in some more adult characters. So who knows? It may stay PG-13 or it may go higher. Who knows? But looking forward to seeing kind of a rising star in Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, well, yeah. She is shot up on the radar. She was in Winter's Bone in 2010 and X-Men First Class 2011. This year has been her year. She did Hunger Games. She did Silver Linings Playbook, a movie I haven't seen that I really want to. She did...
Was she Mystique?
Yeah, she was Mystique in X-Men First Class. She is quickly a rising star. She's a fantastic actress. You know, Hunger Games, she's okay. That's probably not one of my favorite performances from her, but she, in other movies, she's definitely shooting up like just like a rocket, like as far as like actor credibility and her name out there. All right. The first movie I'm going to talk about is Man of Steel. I am a Superman fan. I think he is
Which Avengers movie is dressed as Clark Kent. So just take that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Listen, Superman is a character that I don't feel has been properly adapted to the big screen, at least not in the postmodern subtext, I guess. And I really want to see that character get a movie that shows the full dimension of him. And this new movie looks to have a very interesting take, a little darker, a little edgier, but not too dark, not Batman dark, but just a little more realistic and a little more, it's got a little more teeth to it, it looks like. And I'm really excited to see how they reinvent this character that I think a lot of people would connect with if they ever really experienced him. And I have read Superman comics, I have watched the cartoon growing up, I love Superman, and I really want to see him be done properly. So that is one of mine. Stoll, what is another movie you're excited about next year?
Another one I'm excited about, and it's just kind of funny, it comes out on February 14th. It's called A Good Day to Die Hard, which definitely...
Yippee-ki-yay!
Definitely ironic that it's coming... definitely intentional that it's coming out on February 14th. Definitely a movie that probably a bunch of guys will go see on that day. And I really want to go see it, even though I do have a girlfriend. I want to go see this movie anyway. So, but that's something I'm excited about. Like Die Hard's Bruce Willis. What more can you ask for? It's going to be awesome. So.
I am a Die Hard fan. And I will say, I totally, on Christmas Day, watched Die Hard, and it was amazing still. All right, Bama, what is another movie you're excited about?
The next movie on my list that I'm excited about is Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters. Mostly because, you know, the guy who plays Hawkeye, who made a little bit of a cameo in Thor and was in the Avengers... He's Hansel.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner. I can never remember his name. I'm excited to see him actually play a full-blown character. Because, I mean, like I said, he played a little part in Thor and...
He was in Mission Impossible 3.
Mission Impossible 4.
Mission Impossible 4. Sorry.
He was also in... he was in The Town, and he had a... It was fantastic in The Town.
Yeah, I didn't really see any of those. With Avengers, he didn't really play Hawkeye. He played a manipulated and taken over version of Hawkeye. So for him to actually play a true character that is who he is, I think that's going to be really enjoyable. Just some of the things I've seen from this film, I'm thinking it's going to be similar to Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. Hopefully it will be a little bit better than that. But I think it's going to have some great action sets. So I'm really looking forward to this from a entertainment standpoint.
Oh, it looks like fun. That's for sure.
It looks like a lot of fun.
All right. The next movie on my list is Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. Oh man, this Sin City sequel has been a long time in the making. I'm a big fan of the original. Own it on Blu-ray. I've seen it probably three times. One I liked it every once in a while. I kind of wish I'd seen it more. Some of the way they use visual effects is some of the most creative I've ever seen in the industry. It's got such a unique look and feel to it. I think it's great. And I like the characters in it a lot. And the sequel is finally picking up where we left off. And it's basically what you're looking at with, if you haven't seen the original, it's an anthology series about Sin City, basically. And it's really dark and it's very stylized. And I highly recommend the original. This is the Sin City, A Dame to Kill For, is the sequel. This is directed by Robert Rodriguez, for those of you who know that. And he's a fine director, because he makes fun movies. I mean, they're not great movies. They're just, holy crap, there's a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of entertainment value there. And, this one is bringing back a lot of the old cast. And just yesterday, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was cast in for a role. So I'm really excited to see it.
One of my favorite actors.
Bam. All right, Stoll, what is the last movie on your list?
This is a movie that when I saw the trailer, I was definitely intrigued. I was surprised that they were doing a story like this. It was the new Wizard of Oz movie they're going to do. Now, it's not the Wizard of Oz. It's basically a story about how the wizard comes to Oz and the story of how he gets there and how he kind of becomes what they call the wizard and all that kind of stuff. So
It's got the Oz the Great and Powerful, I think is the name of it.
Yeah, Oz the Great and Powerful. James Franco.
Yeah.
Okay. James Franco is going to be the wizard. So definitely interested to see what they do with it. I don't even know if it'll be a good movie, but when I saw the trailer, I was very intrigued by it for sure. So that's something I'm wanting to get a little bit more information on, but definitely want to possibly check out at some point this year. So.
Awesome. Definitely has a very Alice in Wonderland feel to it.
Whether that's good or... It looks very beautiful.
Very pretty. Absolutely. All right, Bama, what is the last movie on your list here?
All right, the last one on my list, of course, as I've said, superhero movies are my favorite. So why not end with probably what's going to be one of the big superhero movies of this coming year, Iron Man 3. A lot has been kind of thrown around with this.
That trailer was awesome.
Oh, yeah. The trailer
looks really good, and it's very different from what the first two were. It has Tony Stark really looking at himself and, you know, really thinking about all the things that he's done, which is very different from the character from the first two Iron Man and even in the Avenger movies. I'm thinking there's going to be much more character basis in this. Which I think this series kind of needs a little bit. It really needs Tony Stark to kind of look at himself and, you know, have him really think about all the things that he's done with his life and if it's really worth all of the work that he's been done. And I'm expecting some pretty good action scenes. I mean, from the trailer, you see a couple of big action scenes. So I'm really expecting a lot from this film.
Awesome, awesome. The last movie I've got on my list here is Ender's Game. And this is based on a very popular book, science fiction book by Orson Scott Card, also titled Ender's Game. I've actually not read the book. It's on my agenda of things to read through before the movie comes out because I've heard this is just a great piece of science fiction. And one of the reasons I'm very excited about this is because it looks, from what I've seen, of set photos, and it looks like a more classical science fiction. Again, another more of a classical space opera type thing. And it stars the kid who played Asa Butterfield, I believe. And he starred as Hugo Cabret in Hugo. And he was excellent in that movie. And the next big one is Harrison Ford. Now, this is his return to space. He hasn't been in the space genre since Star Wars, I believe. So it's really exciting to get to see him be that kind of role. And he's going to play this old teacher, mentor, sergeant type figure.
He almost went to space in Indiana Jones, but
he got
to interact with things from space.
George Lucas calls them interdimensional beings.
They're still from space.
No, they're interdimensional. They're from between dimensions.
They had a UFO.
It was because it travels between dimensions. That's what George Lucas says. Okay, anyway, all right. So this movie's also got Haley Steinfeld from True Grit. Fantastic. We already used the word fantastic, by the way. Awesome young actress from True Grit, and also Ben Kingsley, creepy, eerie, Ben Kingsley, you know what to expect. So I'm very excited to see that movie. And I think that concludes our three. We all picked three, and there's a lot more out there. The Wolverine, I'm also very excited for. Elysium, that's Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9. This is his next movie. There's a lot of good stuff. I keep an eye out and for new trailers and everything coming out. And we're going to love to talk about it in the coming year. All right, we're going to kick off our first normal review of the 2013 year. We're going to check out Act of Valor. Now, that is the movie starring U.S. military. And we're going to talk about it and see, is it really a good movie or is it just a gimmick? Find out next week on BCD Flix's Review. And until next time, just remember, we're all here, sitting here, not dead, not nuked, not collapsed, and not in Africa, like 2012. Roland Emmerich cheated all of us.
Take that, Mayans.
Kill the Batman.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm a plain dude disguised as a nut dude.
Game over.